right, here we are, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. Thank you so much for joining us here today. I do apologize for being a bit late. It's been one of those weeks, tech issues, one after the other after the other. Today we're having some issues here with the stream, the video feed, actually, from our guests here today, which we'll introduce in a moment. But we also have the issue of the websites being down. Now, redice.tv is currently back up and running. We are still investigating why redicemembers.com is down. I do apologize for that. I do apologize for any inconvenience, especially to our members out there. So thank you for your patience while we keep investigating, kind of figure out what it was. We thought it was a certificate issue first. I don't suspect any malicious, kind of attacks or intents or something like that. But we're still looking. It's a bit strange, a bit unclear actually at this point. But anyway, redice.tv is up. I did not, and I just saw that right before we went live here, because we have someone working on it, and I didn't have time to post it there. So you can't actually watch it through Redice TV right now, this live stream. So that's some progress, but still not, good enough. So we'll investigate that, and we hope redicemembers.com to be up here, hopefully as soon as possible. But yeah, thank you guys for joining us. Henrik here, of course, Redice TV. We're doing an interview today. We're going to talk about the situation in the Netherlands, and I want to kind of expand our conversation a bit too, broader, to kind of talk a bit about what's happening in Europe overall. My take on this is that it's kind of been a little bit of, I guess, the empire strikes back. You know, we've had, of course, with Trump and all that stuff, and there were some candidates in many European countries that were doing well. There's some still that are doing well, actually, but we haven't kind of seen the breakthrough, what we've seen. What the targeting of Salvini in Italy, they've threatened him with jail. There's other issues going on there. We've had Le Pen that we thought would do better. Now she might still be in a good spot. We'll see what happens, you know, next election there. But the demographic window is closing at the same time. In Sweden, same thing there. You'd expect the Sweden Democrats would do better. But then they haven't. They were like been perpetual number three for what, the last two elections or something like that. So some things you got to give, right? So we're going to talk about that and some other stuff, too, with our guest here today. And so we had him on video for a little bit, but unfortunately we just had to go over to a still because the video wasn't cooperating and it wasn't very flattering when it's glitching and pausing at certain places. But anyway, Faust, who previously was with Erik Imbrand, which we've done streams with, is with us today. How's it going, Faust?
Thank you very much. I think the last time we did a stream together was also about the Dutch elections in 2017.
That long ago. That's crazy, huh?
Yeah. I know, right?
We're in this hamster wheel. Same thing.
We were excited back then.
Exactly, right? It was, who's the Zionist candidate again?
Wilders,
that's right. Gert Wilders, that's right. There's some positive aspect there and some more that I'd be critical of, but regardless, give us an overview. What's happening in the Netherlands right now? We'll dive into the result of the latest election that happened, what, about two and a half weeks ago now?
Yeah, 2 weeks ago. The 17th of March were the elections.
Right.
Well, what's been happening over here, the elections actually weren't greatly interesting. Mostly we saw sort of very little shifted, but mostly things fragmented between more parties. The more interesting thing has been about lockdowns. There's been a lot of violent demonstrations about lockdowns. In January, we saw the largest riots in 30 years about the lockdowns in the Netherlands.
That's right.
We've had a terror attack from the left against the church where they blew up the front door of the church because of COVID. The media had been inciting people against this church because they weren't obeying lockdown regulations. And so some leftists blew the front of the church. And there's also a big scandal in the cabinet because they're currently forming a new government coalition because this is the Netherlands. We have so many political parties. All governments are always coalitions. It was leaked that the sitting government parties wanted one of the more difficult members of parliament to be removed from parliament because he had caused the cabinet to fall at the beginning of the year over scandals with benefit fraud and so on, which apparently the government had been really incompetently dealing with. So that's big in the news right now. But generally, everything's been dominated by lockdown stuff, really.
That's right. I remember seeing some footage from that now. I'm just checking that the stream is up. Some people on DLive said it's freezing, and some says fine now, good now, okay. I don't think that's on my end. I think that's DLive. Anyway, Yeah, I remember seeing some, and it was like some brutal ways that the state used water cannons and stuff like that, and some people were really smashed up by that, right?
The last few weekends, over the last few months, almost every weekend there's a violent demonstration in Amsterdam, usually in front of the Museumplein. And it tends to end with the police beating up lots and lots of people, you know, water cannons, riot police, cavalry charges. I think they beat something like 100 people into hospital every weekend now.
Jesus. What do you feel about it all? I think I heard you on Thomas Baden-Reese, one of his streams, and I think you were pretty much on... It sounded like we're more or less on the same page, that this is basically a gay op in terms of the overreach of how the various governments around the world have been using this. That's what I'm seeing at this point. But what do you feel on the ground in the Netherlands?
Yeah, I think very much that this is definitely a way to gain more control, centralize power, and centralize the economy particularly.
Yes, yes.
On the whole, don't really get into the weeds too much with all this virus and lockdown and vaccination, whatever. I don't really care about all that too much. It's just, you know, those are all details. The greater problem is that the lockdowns are here, that the whole corona thing is being used as a way to centralize power. And that's what the discussion needs to be about, really, rather than whether the vaccines are good or bad or whether they'll work or not. That's all fringe. That's not interesting.
Part of me feels that it does tie into the, and let me know if Faust is a bit low, by the way, I can turn you up here a little bit, but part of it, I feel, is that it kind of dovetails a little bit with the nationalist issue as well, because at least in some other countries, I've seen a lot of, you know, whatever country we're talking about, if there's a demonstration in Denmark, the Danish flags are out. In Sweden, we've seen the same thing. It's kind of almost a little bit of an overall awakening process I think a lot of people have gone through, and there seems to be some association, at least in the lockdown protest, with nationalist sentiments. Have you seen anything like that in the Netherlands?
To an extent, but there's also quite a lot of sort of new age and hippie and sort of lefty types.
You get some of that
as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
On the political side, of course, the elections recently proved that the lockdowns are not a big enough issue for people to change their mind very much. That's one thing. And the only parties who oppose the lockdown are the ones on the right wing here. So you could definitely categorize it as a sort of a nationalist right wing issue on the whole.
Yeah, yeah. All right, interesting. So we've been following that in many other countries and stuff like that. I think it's overall, it's a net positive at the end to see the overreach by the state and get people questioning wherever they fall on the political spectrum. To be honest, I think we're in a situation where we have a hostile elite, and it seeks to do various things with us, not least just replace us, but take control. And I think that this is another mechanism, too. The economy, as you said, is being massively hit. You get centralization of power. The richer have gotten richer, and the those at the very top upper echelons of society have managed to capitalize on the situation to their advantage, obviously. But anyway, let's switch over to the... to the election, then. Same old story. Rutte is back, back in power. He continues in power, rather.
Yes, over the last 10 years, the VVD has been the only power player in Dutch politics, basically, because they're the only party that has managed to maintain a somewhat big supporter base. So in the Netherlands, we have 17 parties in parliament currently, with 150 seats. VVD actually isn't on the whole that big historically speaking. They only have 34 seats, which is about 26-27% of the vote. And back in the 90s, there would be three or four parties with that amount of seats. These days, though, as you can see on the map, I think there are, most parties hover somewhere between 5 and 15 seats, with only a few closer to 20, and this has meant that, you know, the fragmentation of the political spectrum has meant it's quite hard to form a good ruling government, which is why we see more and more centralization from the cabinet away from the parliament. Parliament increasingly is losing its controlling function simply because that if any dissent happens between the coalition, the government can fall at any moment, and they try to prevent that as hard as they can. The new story mainly is of fragmentation, as I say. We get several new parties here, mostly representing specific interests. So we've got a farmers' party, specifically advocating for the interests of farmers and their economic interests mainly. And these are mostly against environmental regulations and so on. Then we got Bijeen, which is the Black Interest Party, essentially. And we already had a Turkish nationalist party, DENK, which has maintained its support base. Their vote share correlates almost one-to-one with the amount of Turkish people in the Netherlands, funnily enough.
Of course.
But DENK is sort of the Muslim Interest Party.
Yeah.
And Bijeen is the sort of progressive Blacks Interest Party. So those are there. Then we have a splintering of the populist vote. You know, 10 years ago, Wilders was the only populist voice and he got around 20 seats. He got 17 seats this election, losing some ground, but that's mostly made up for by the growth of Forum for Democracy and Ja 21. These two parties could be put on the populist right in the whole as well. Forum for Democracy maybe more to the right on some issues than the PVV. Ja 21, much more classically liberal. If Sargon of Akkad were to start a political party in the Netherlands, it would be Ja 21, essentially.
All right, gotcha. That should place it on the map for people, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a cultural reference everyone who lives on the internet knows.
Unfortunately.
And Volt also got into parliament with four seats. Now, Volt is... I don't know if any of your listeners know, American listeners probably won't know, but Volt is the first pro-European EU political party that takes part in multiple countries. They want to have representatives of political part of Volt in every parliament in the EU. And they are very violently pro-EU, and they are backed by a lot of money from vested interests like the mega corporations, lobbyists, and so on. So that's a big story on the left is these guys come into parliament and D66, which is sort of the somewhat woke, but mostly neoliberal party, very progressive on things like environment and racism and sexism and so on. A lot of the classical left vote has shifted to them away from the Socialist Party and the Labour Party. The Labour Party is almost dead. And most of the vote and the Greens have been halved in the last election, which you think is a good thing. But no, actually, a lot of their voters shifted towards this even more neoliberal pro-EU party. It's just as woke as most Green parties are. Mm-hmm. So the story is basically the populist right grows a little bit, but fragments over three parties instead of being more stronger under Wilders. And on the left, we see the death of the old sort of class focused, economics focused left wing, the Socialists, Labour Party, the Greens shifting towards this more globalist, more woke sort of party. That's a big story in this election, essentially.
Yeah.
And the anti-lockdown vote was basically Forum for Democracy. These were the biggest anti-lockdown voice during this election campaign. And they got only 8 seats, which shows that actually a vast majority of people don't care enough about the lockdowns to change their vote.
I think a lot of people still have this perception that, well, it's going to go away, so we won't kind of betray our political parties in order to favor this one, you know, kind of a one-party vote, one-party issue, basically, I think. But we'll see what happens if it continues, which is kind of my prediction. And this could obviously turn out to be wrong, but I don't think the state will let go of these kinds of things. I think we'll get new strains, we'll get new excuses, essentially, and then this will morph into other things. They've already started talking about, for example, climate lockdowns, right? We got to get, you know, lockdowns to ensure that our environment is safe, that we're all not going to die in 11 years or whatever it is now. And then that might even morph into some kind of social justice lockdown. In order to stop white supremacy, we have to lock down our nations. We'll see what happens, right? But yeah, that's interesting, though. That means the issue that's dominated, obviously, 2020. You know, the lockdowns, the coronavirus and all that stuff, everything has been, you know, horribly just shifted in that regard. But we'll see if it does indeed go away, you know, we'll see if things change politically. Otherwise, I would assume things actually does change politically, because people are going to be so sick of it, you know.
I think they'll implement these things the way they always do. It'll be 2 steps forward, 1 step back.
Yeah.
And then, you know, You feel relieved that the lockdowns are over or whatever. At the same time, there's a lot of constitutional rights and so on and freedoms that have been lost. A lot of small business has been destroyed. And that's change that's permanent. And that's change that you don't notice as quickly or as fast. One of the things, for example, here is that the Constitution has essentially been suspended over the last 4 months or so with what they call an emergency powers bill, which has to be renewed every 2 months, I think, but they've been renewing it every 2 months. And it essentially suspends freedom of assembly. It allows for a curfew, which under the Constitution normally is not allowed. And it gives the police emergency powers, which is why the police has been able to handle things so brutally for because the reason they beat people up at those protests, the given reason is too many people, coronavirus risk. And then they just start beating people if they refuse to leave.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So they have an emergency bill to kind of get away with that, and then they continue to just... I mean, did you guys have two the same... was it 3 weeks to flatten the curve? That's how all this began, basically.
Yeah.
And look at it now, right? A year later, here we are, and it's not going away. So I would assume that this emergency bill kind of is extended or continued or something like that. But it's also amazing to see... But again, I think that... If we just for a moment, we'll talk more about that later, to, you know, kind of compare America and Europe and things like that. But it's pretty amazing to see that there's definitely been much more protest overall in European countries, I think, so far than we've seen in an organized manner anyway in America. Seems more kind of shattered, and it takes a different kind of form there in terms of the protests and stuff like that. But it's amazing to me how quick people were just willing to give up their rights, right? And as you said, freedom of assembly out the window. And as far as I know, none of our constitutions, or whether you have a foundational law, whatever you have, some kind of document that kind of grants, you know, rights to citizens and so forth, none of it says anything about some kind of medical emergency. That, oh, there's one, this caveat that if there's enough bad of the disease, then all of this can be thrown out the window. And people have largely gone along with this.
There was a court case on this, actually, that was won by the anti-lockdown group called Viruswahnsinn, which actually banned, the judge said that it was not constitutionally allowed, the curfew, and it had to be thrown out. And also that the government hadn't proven that corona was an immediate emergency. The classic example in the Netherlands is if a dike breaks, the government gets to issue emergency powers to fix the dike. Mm-hmm. That's an immediate and problem that needs to be fixed right now. We can't wait for courts or whatever to sort it out.
And very specific to the Netherlands because of the...
Yes, we have a thing for dikes. but the judge said, well, basically, you've been able to debate this in Parliament. This could have been gone to the Senate. If you wanted this to pass, you should have tried to make a constitutional amendment or pass a law. This is not the way things are done, these emergency powers in this way. There was an injunction on that, so it wasn't executed, and it's back to a higher court of appeals now, and it'll probably be in the court of appeals for, I don't know, the next year or so. Mm-hmm. That's how these things usually go.
Yeah. Let me do just a couple of these in case I lose them in the activity field since we're live here today, guys, if you're watching the archive, of course. But I just want to say thank you to Shlomo Kuhl for the diamond. Does it mine, I think it is, with the diamond. Says, cave kangs shall prevail. Thank you, sir. Appreciate that. Silosopher with the diamond. Brad C with 122. And the Netflux with a Ninjagini. Thanks so much, guys. Appreciate that. No message attached to that Ninjagini there. All right. So what else regarding the election then? Is this how it's, okay, so we've seen, so I think some things reveal themselves in the American election this cycle that I and many others have talked about for years, black box voting, Diebold, we've talked about these things. There's some new companies that have showed up, of course, on the scene that were sued and stuff like that. There's countersuits in the U.S. and things like that. If you cover or watched any of that at all, is there any chance that, because some of these machines that were used in the U.S. election are used in other European countries and other countries all around the world? I think Canada is using them. I think Germany is using them. Anything like this in the
Netherlands? Most European countries don't use election voting machines, especially because they say it's sensitive to fraud. So,
yeah.
For example, in the Dutch elections, we only use physical ballots and ballot counting.
Very good. That's excellent. Very, very good. I didn't know the situation there. So there's no chance.
I think that's most of Europe.
Yeah, there's some I heard of, and I forget the details about it now. I'll have to look it up to be more specific, but I thought that there were some countries that were using it. But anyway, so that means that people are largely, how would you analyze this situation? How would you diagnose this problem that people then overall are just crawling more or less to the same old parties and nothing changes despite the radical transformations that's being taken now in Europe? They still go to the Mark Rutte's of this world to get their political fix.
Yeah, it's something I'm not quite sure about yet. I mean, we saw the same sort of thing happen in 2017, right? Like you said in the beginning, we were very excited for Le Pen. We were excited for Wilders. We were excited that maybe, you know, UKIP could break through or that the Sverige Demokraten could win in Sweden. And it all was a disappointment when those elections came around. It all turned out to be much less big. And now they seem to be even receding. Like I say, Wilders lost some ground, although populists on the whole gained about 8 seats, depending on which parties you put in that box. But even then, the definitely populist vote for Democracy in Wilders gained 3 seats. So there's some slight growth there. So the anti-system voice did grow a little bit, but not nearly enough to actually change things. And that seems to be the case throughout most of Europe, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that the opposition is uninspiring. I mean, Wilders isn't a charismatic guy. Forum for Democracy has an inspiring leader, but they don't have good ideas. They don't have really an ideology. They don't stick to their principles. They don't sell very well. And I think in the U.S., basically, Trump was a bit of a fluke as well.
Yeah.
He might have been cheated out of the last election. That's, of course, you know, you never know. But on the whole, I think the establishment has done its best to avoid another 2016-2017. Media demonization of the populists here is, of course, all the time. You see that in all European countries, that the media is used as a tool to maintain the status quo, to maintain the powers that be. And they seem to be still quite good at it and quite effective at it. And the police brutality, increasing usage of police. I think the United Kingdom is the go-to example here.
Yeah.
I mean, just an increasing police state, essentially. And the fact that the media is being used this way, that the police is increasingly authoritarian, does show that they are at least worried about resistance.
Yeah, no, they are. And to that point I mentioned earlier, then, to kind of follow up on that, I think we've seen kind of the Empire Strikes Back kind of scenario, right? We've had a number of things happen in various European countries. I know that Erkin Brand, which was the previous group you were involved in, and if you want to speak to any of that, please go ahead regarding, you know, either what happened or whatever. But as far as I understand the situation, they, of course, have been vehemently targeted in the media. There are people been doxxed. The apparatus there in the Netherlands have been very worried about this. But we've seen comparable things where, you know, first out the gates in the UK was like, what, the banning of, I think, National Action, things like that.
Yeah.
There were in, Finland banned the Nordic resistance movement. There's talks about it in both Norway and Denmark. There's been international pressure to ban the group in Sweden as well from America. From Zionist interests in America, basically. And then you have Generation Identity, right, been banned in France. What else? What am I missing here? There's a couple of these that have happened, which seems like they're cracking down hard, Faust.
Yeah, exactly. There's the occasional talk here about we need to outlaw PVV and Forum for Democracy because they are like, you know, they're not egalitarian and they don't support human rights and all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
I think they only move towards banning when they think it's an actual threat, whether that's electorally or in metapolitical. That's when they try to ban something. If you're being threatened with being banned, at least you know you're being effective. Otherwise, they wouldn't need to do that, which shows that considering they're not banning any of the right-wing populist parties, they're not a serious threat, apparently. Which I find a little bit strange that they would ban things like National Action and Nordic Resistance because, on the whole, those guys kind of spread the image that the left wants us to spread of violent skinheads and so on, which...
I don't know about National Action. I don't know too much about them. Nordic Resistance Movement has overall been definitely more well-behaved than that, I would say.
Okay.
And I think the one case in Finland that they based partially, I think, the banning on, was there was basically one leftist that was spitting on a guy, and then he kicked him in the stomach, I think, and he fell backwards, he hit his head, and then I think he died like a couple of days later in the hospital. And that,
oh, yeah.
That was used like as a case. It was, again, he was defending himself, right? And that was used as a case, oh, these are violent extremists and stuff like that. And, of course, not everyone might, you know, whatever, approve, agree, no, or think the tactics
the
are right.
The Nordic Resistance Movement is famous for these marches, right?
Right.
Riot shields and so on.
Sure.
That's
sure.
Not really the sort of stormtrooper image. I'm not sure if that's what you really want.
Right.
It calls up certain images from the past, and that's still not very popular with the majority of the people.
No, it definitely, I don't think it is. At the same time, I think a different clientele may be attracted to that. It depends, I guess, the worse and worse things be. There's kind of like a natural radicalization of society. It's not natural, but it's a radicalization of society, the worse and worse it gets, obviously. But overall, I think the Nordic Resistance Movement is I've talked to many of the guys there. They're overall, they're very good, you know, very good people. I might not see eye to eye on every issue in terms of how to approach the problem or whatever, but I'm glad that they're there and doing this and showing that there is some kind of opposition to it. But we'll see. They could be. I mean, again, because of the international pressure, though, they could definitely be targeted and banned. I'm actually surprised Sweden hasn't done it yet. So I'm not sure what's going on there, but we'll have to see.
Well, again, as I say, maybe they're just not. They'll only move towards banning if there's a real threat, if they start gaining seats in parliament or whatever. There's like 1,000 man marches. But I think the proof's in the pudding regarding the sort of optics war, as the Americans like to call it. What destroyed the American alt-right was definitely Charlottesville and acting like goons and trying to be stormtroopers. So I think that strategy has probably not worked.
Yeah. What do you think we should do? I mean, Generation Identity, though, if we look at France, and I'm not sure how familiar you are with it, but I'm sure you have some comments on it regarding they were, again, they didn't really have that. They had some stunts, whatever you want to call it, right, where they garnered a lot of attention going up on buildings and for banner drops and stuff. But as far as I know, they were never violent and stuff, but that was still, it was interesting because in France, you had, I can't believe I'm spacing on the guy's name now. What's his name? The head guy? The banker in France?
Macron.
Macron, thank you. Spacing on that for a second. Macron, of course. He came out and he did this spiel about, you know, separatist Islam and stuff, and we need to crack down on this. A lot of people, I guess, more conservatives at least, were like, oh, this is great, you know, kind of thing. And I remember early on I said, just watch out because they're gonna make sure that, you know, they cut a little bit on that end, but then they're going to do on the other. And essentially what seems to be happening is that the Macrons, excuse me, and the banking class that he represents and the elite and stuff, they basically want to see a merger of the ethnic groups in the various European countries that have been imported, right? And so one way of kind of trying to ensure that to a certain extent is to make sure that the people who are in the various European countries integrate, right? That we need to blend out, we need to mix with each other. And so partially you can't have this, you know, kind of separate colony inside of France, which is Muslim driven and stuff. So even these very pro-Muslim forces in France were coming down on that and said, no, you have to start integrating into society. You can't have your own schools. You can't wear, you know, the burqa and stuff like that. Which is my point then, is like, well, why should they be in the country? But then you realize they want you to merge. And so now they're banning French separatism on the other end of the spectrum, right? And so that's partially why I think that they were doing this. They're like, as you said, two steps forward, one step back. They're giving it a little bit and then they're taking it a little bit. But how do you see the situation?
Well, France has very much had the legacy of Louis XIV still instilled within it. It is one of the most authoritarian states within Europe, within its culture, in its cultural sense. It's a very centralized, top-down heavy state and has always been so. And the reason they're banning Generation Identity and the case brought against them is actually that they were usurping powers of the state by blocking migrant entry. It's not that illegal that they're defending illegal immigrants necessarily from a juridical standpoint. It was that they were not workers of the state. They were not state entities, so they were illegally usurping functions of the border guards, essentially. France has always had this quite authoritarian streak in them. Which is why Macron is, I think, trying to centralize all of these things. But it's also because he's desperately trying to gain any popularity he can. I think he's something like 20% or so in the opinion polls. And Le Pen might win if it's just against him. So he's been beating the anti-Islam drum quite hard. A few months ago, there was a debate with the Minister of the Interior and Le Pen in France, where the Minister of the Interior actually accused Le Pen of not taking the threat of Islamization seriously enough. So I think it's a play for popularity, because he knows that the anti-Islam issue is popular. But the banning of generation identity is probably simply because they are effective as a military political force.
Yeah.
Most people don't speak French, and most of this whole online nationalist scene is far too oriented towards the Americans and follows the American perspective and the American news and so on things. But the French, like the Germans, are much more insular, turned inwards. So there's quite a big nationalist movement in France. There's quite a big nationalist movement in Germany. You probably just don't know about it if you're a monolingual English speaker, because they don't publish anything in English. They do it all in French or German.
Yeah.
So generation identity is part of a way bigger network of especially intellectuals and metapolitical organizations and think tanks in France. And they're attractive to youths. They do intelligent activism instead of marching around with flags and pretending to be stormtroopers from the 1930s. They do photogenetic ops, which doesn't require much people, low risk, and it looks cool. It attracts young people.
Yeah.
So generation identity being banned, they had an excuse to do it. They'll probably try and do it with other groups and organizations as well. One thing notable, though, is France has quite a lot of right-wing public intellectuals, Renaud Camus, Welbeck, Zemmour, a number of others, and they actually get on TV quite a lot, and they talk about their viewpoints, and that's quite unique. I don't think in any other country right-wing intellectuals get that much airplay.
Yeah, it's a good point. I think, and I might be, I might be wrong about my perception. Maybe not right-wing personalities, but Denmark surprisingly actually has a pretty good dialogue when it comes to some of these issues. They've been famous for looking towards Sweden and just like they're insane. They're shutting down. There's no discussion about these things and whatever. They're sadly though slowly moving in the same direction as Sweden, but at least they're having a conversation about it as it's unfolding in Denmark. But what about Germany? I want to go back and ask about Erken Brand a little bit and kind of that situation in the Netherlands there. But talk to us about Germany a little bit. You know quite a bit about this, and you talked in another show that you did about how many smaller groups there are in a country like Germany. There isn't like this one monolithic kind of thing. I mean, they have some of the political parties, of course, AfD and others, but as a force in terms of moving in a nationalist direction, much more scattered and compartmentalized, right?
And different ideologies. So, for example, you've got the Reichsbürgerbewegung, which are, I suppose, imperial German. You know, they want the Kaiser back, basically. They're monarchists. Those have about 100,000 members. And then there's a absolutely huge neo-Nazi scene still in Germany. A lot of skinhead culture, of course. But when I mean huge, I mean they get an annual event together in East Germany called Schwertenschild, which gets about 6,000 attendees. And you get whole villages, which are just right-wing villages. Some have just basically not changed since the 1940s, essentially, in their views on what they do. And this is usually these skinhead groups and so on are between 50 to 200 members or so. And there's a lot of those. And you get a few reactionary intellectuals, like you got Götz Kubitschek and Antaios Publishing. But the German scene is much more Volks, we would say. It's much more like lower class people, normal people who are just friend groups, activist groups, things like that, who hold very right-wing views, but they don't have intellectual representatives or a manifesto or anything like that.
Right.
They might have a logo, and then they go drink beer together and complain about, you know, Jews and immigrants. So, but yeah, there's quite a lot of nationalist sentiment in Germany in that sense. But like even the NPD, as cringe as the NPD is, still gets something like 3 or 4% of the vote every election in Germany. And the NPD are openly neo-Nazi organization. AfD is more populist, although they have a quite reactionary right-wing flank on their side as well. So I think it's kind of underestimated how big right-wing sentiment still is within Germany. I mean, the Christian Democratic Party of Merkel is a lot more right-wing on a lot of things than you might think. It's just Merkel herself isn't, and she maintains that party pulling to the left.
Yeah, exactly. That's true. And of course, here's just one of the stories here, but a lot of attacks on, especially on AfD. It seems that the AfD has been more targeted than the, was it the NPD? Was that the name of it? NPD, yeah. As the politicians have been like, there was one case recently, and this might be the one, I'm actually not sure, I'm not too well read up on every single case, but where I guess some Antifa members were like posing as cops or whatever, and I guess the guy opened the door and they like kept him for hours. They cracked his skull with a hammer and shit like that. Like there's a crazy, violent scene in Germany, politically between these different factions that you don't really hear too much about in the press, actually.
Oh, it's, one thing, for example, is football hooligan culture in Germany is very political, where, supporters of different clubs will be right or left wing and fight each other. And that gets to be a quite political issue. For example, within Bremen and Hamburg, you get violent clashes quite often between these supporter groups and a big, and then one club will be quite far right and then the other side will be really Antifa type. So there's quite a lot of fighting like that. In the Netherlands, that hasn't happened for a while. It used to be the same here in the 80s and 90s. In 1980, we had a street battle between 11,000 police and 100,000 communists, Marxists and others, which lasted for about a day. So it got quite violent back then. But that's kind of stopped since Pim Fortuyn was murdered over here. So in 2002, a quite successful politician who might have become the leader of the biggest party and therefore he would be invited to become the premier, essentially the prime minister, he was shot and killed by a Green Left activist to prevent that happening. There hasn't been that much violence since then. Until quite recently, with the slight growth of populism here, we saw Thierry Baudet has been attacked a number of times, his door graffitied over. And we had the first left-wing terror attack in quite a while just this week, where this church was blown up.
Where was that?
It was in Krimpen. It's a small town.
Where is that on the map, so to speak? North, southwest, north?
Let me see if I can get you.
Krimpen. Let me see if I can find a story about that in the meantime. I'm showing some footage here, too. One of the... I remember seeing a while back, some of the German football, like, hooligan supporter clubs or whatever, and it was like, holy shit. Like, if these people are politically engaged, you know what I mean? And, like, actually decided to, like, you know, get involved in some way, they'll be... Again, it's just this. I mean, there's nothing wrong with sports or whatever. We know it's a simulacrum. It's a replacement for something else or whatever. But holy shit, I tell you, some of these supporter clubs gotta get their head in the game and realize what's happening to their countries. You know,
over here, whenever there's protests, I guess, like for example, when the statue stuff was happening in the United States, that was happening over here as well. Left wing groups and black groups wanted to take down statues of our colonial and sailor heroes. And football hooligan clubs came out in numbers to defend them, actually. There was some rioting over that as well here last year.
Yeah. So this was just the other day you said the church was burned?
Yes, just this week.
Just this week. See, I can't even find it. Netherlands, church burned down or burnt. And it's like nothing. Of course, you know, again, it's like it's probably local stories right there, and then it doesn't really reach.
Well, it was a bomb, actually.
A bomb. Okay, all right. Let me see here. We find Netherlands bomb explosion. Here we go, outside a Dutch coronavirus testing site. Okay. Explosion near COVID-19. That's that they're reporting on, though, of course, because it's some crazy lockdown person behind it. It's probably a government gay op.
Yeah, I have a story for you. I'll send it to you on Telegram.
Send it on Telegram, and I'll pull that in right there. Okay, thank you. Okay, interesting. So what do they know? What more do they know about that now? They know it was politically motivated. Is that what's going on?
Yeah, so this church had openly stated that they were, because churches were asked, because freedom of religion is a big thing due to the history of Protestantism and Catholicism fighting each other in the Netherlands. We have very strong freedom of religion laws, so the government can't actually say mosques and churches can't hold services. They generally can't do that without a constitutional amendment. So they were... churches were asked not to have services or to reduce the amount of attendees. Mm-hmm. But our sort of hardline Protestant Reform community said, no, we're, you know, God's more important than the coronavirus, so we're going to church. And this particular church said that they were going to ignore any and all mask mandates, lockdown rules, or anything. So the media has been harassing them. And a journalist got beat up by one of the church attendees. Well, beat up. He got kicked in the stomach, basically, because he was harassing people trying to enter church on a Sunday. And this guy got pissed off, and he tried to get the journalist to go away and kicked him away. Yeah. And then the next day, I think there was 2 days between it, a bomb was put at that church, probably by a left-wing activist, because the church wasn't following the coronavirus rules.
Hmm. All right, interesting. Yeah, it does kind of tie into each other there. What else? So do you want to talk anything about Erkenbrand? Are they still up and running?
Unfortunately, I don't want to say too much about it, but okay. If you're Dutch, they're not a worthwhile organization to go to anymore. I'm afraid that they've really fallen into the whole radical neo-Nazi spiel, and all they talk about anymore is Jews, and quite a lot of the more intellectual and valuable guys have left at this point, so unfortunately, I wouldn't recommend them. Dutch scene's kind of sort of floundering, like a lot of nationalist movements at the moment. I think when the lockdowns are over, a lot of activity will reemerge, but for now it's been quite stagnant. The only group that's actually quite proactive and growing right now is Voorpost, but they are more active in Flanders than in the Netherlands.
I think I've heard about them, yeah. What would you like to see? What's your recommendation to also young guys, you know, listening, and we're talking about, you know, there's the different type of thing in America, whatever. Let's talk about like many European countries. What would you like to see? What do you think would work to reach people?
I think the example to take is the Flemish movement. So Flanders is the Dutch-speaking half of Belgium. Belgium does not exist. It's the southern Netherlands. They're a bunch of filthy separatists, and we're going to annex them someday. But the Flemish movements are sort of the Dutch nationalist movement within Belgium. They're split over whether they want to rejoin with the Netherlands or be an independent republic. But on the whole, they are very, very well organized. They've got student unions, the KVHV and the NSV, which is the Nationalist Student Union and the Catholic Conservative Student Union. They have their own trade unions. They have their own activist groups like Voorpost. And they have political representation within Vlaams Belang. And to an extent, every Flemish parliamentary party has a Flamingant faction. So the CD&V, the Liberals, the N-VA has parliamentary members who are either separatists or Greater Netherlands thinkers. So they're well represented across the political spectrum. And they organize a lot of things within the community. A lot of people talk about this idea of parallelism. That is kind of what Flanders has been doing.
Yeah.
Building things away from the Belgian and Flemish, from the Belgian state, building Flemish institutions. So they've got their own, like I said, they've got their own trade unions. They've got their own lobby groups for small business. They've got their own insurance companies even, health insurance mainly, but also car insurance. They've got like garages which will offer you like a discount if you're a member of a nationalist group, things like that. Yeah. So this parallelism is really how things should be built. They've got some public intellectuals as well, like Robert Stoikers. And that's really the way to go with things. I think one of the worst things has been this huge focus on America, which the only thing happening in the American nationalist scene is entertainment streaming, is people just doing live streams and not building anything, talking about the news, not, they're just entertainers. No, you need entertainers. You need some news channels. You need stuff like that. But you can't only have that. You need actual organizations on the ground. So I think that really a lot of nationalist groups should look at what the Flemish movement is doing and take lessons from them, because they've been quite successful. And at this point, they're at almost 50% of the electoral vote. If you put the more right-wing parties, if you put the really right-wing party, Vlaams Belang, they're about almost at 30% of the vote now. And they can affect real change. And they don't only affect change politically, but they simply affect change by building things in their own communities. They don't need the government to come in. They'll just do it themselves.
Okay, I've argued for this we here on the show have argued this for some time too. You have to begin locally. You have to prevent these things locally. You have to be on the, you know, the school board, the city council. You have, you know, all these basically, yes, they're going to be boring, stupid things where you're going to be half asleep in these meetings, but that's how they've taken over, right? Do you know if Vlaams Belang has managed to, let's say, the immigration question then? Have they, due to their strong local presence, been able to have a say in this, or are they being run over by the Belgian national system?
Both, actually, sort of. So wherever there is a right-wing majority within a town, they can vote against having refugees resettled or having refugee centers built. This also happens in the Netherlands. But sometimes that gets superseded on, you know, the grounds of the national interest, and then the state just comes in and does it anyway.
Yeah.
But it at least prevents it sometimes, and it's a barrier to an extent. There was a famous story in Aalst last, I think, 2019, where they had a carnival parade where they had they were satirizing Jews and Muslims.
I remember that.
And when the funny. It was quite funny.
Yeah.
But when when the Belgian state and the UN and the EU all said, "Oh, this is awful and blah blah blah, it's terrible," they delisted themselves from the UN heritage list. And the mayor basically said, "Well, we're still going to do it anyway. You know, go away. This is our tradition. We'll do whatever we want."
Yeah, that's right.
And that's because it's a majority right-wing town, and they'll just ignore it. People talking shit about them.
There was some funny. I'd see if I can find some footage of the actual marches and stuff like that. Yeah, here are some like that. We could play some of that in the meantime. Yeah, there was a lot of complaining on this, obviously. But it's like, screw you. It's like they should be able to do whatever they want to do. If they want to make fun of things, it's totally up to them. So that's cool. I saw that too. Remember, the mayor was like, you know, no, this is it's not a problem. It's what we want to do. This is tradition. And it's also kind of this, really, the signs of the times of how, I mean, let's be honest about this. We have forces all over that are making fun of white people and white culture and Europeans all the time, right? And this is never any problem, or whatever. As soon as we do it about another group, then it's the whole the whole universe is just collapsing because of it, right?
Yeah, exactly. This is a very centrist talking point. It's a sort of libertarian take that you can't make fun of anyone anymore. But it is still true. Like, humor's become very restrictive.
I mean,
you can't make any jokes about blacks, about women, about gays, about Jews. I mean, who are you supposed to make fun of then?
Only whites. Only Europeans.
Yeah, but
that's
fine. You can't make fun of whites because we built everything. There's not much you can mock us for.
Yeah, no, I get your point, but it's sanctioned, right? But so anyway, to go back to the point about the working locally and things like this, I think this is a very good method, and starting not only just organizations for the sake of organization, but as you say, businesses, which then would imply essentially listings of those businesses, that there's a network of people that communicate. If you need your car fixed, if you need whatever you need to do, go to those people that are your people, that are on your side, and support them, right?
Yeah, if you know, you know, sort of thing. It's not like you can go to a website of like, this is the Flemish approved businesses or anything.
Right.
But yeah, you'll know if they have a Flemish flag up or a Prince flag up, you'll know that this is a nationalist business. And the thing is, in Flanders, you can actually fly those symbols quite easily. It's fairly uncontroversial to fly the Prince flag or the Flemish flag. In the Netherlands, that's already a bit more difficult. But even here, you can wave nationalist symbols more easily, I think, than somewhere like Germany or the United States.
Yeah, because you do have that issue that as soon as that begins to be an issue, there's infiltration, right? There's takeover, exposing, doxing. It's saying this is a bad person and stuff. It's not that it shouldn't be done or whatever. And eventually, I think that will reach... what's the right word here? Boiling point, a sense that for one, people won't care anymore, but the other is when it's enough people that are on our side, they will go to those businesses and continue that. The other problem, of course, right now that we face, is not only deplatforming, but people's livelihoods is being destroyed and things like that. I remember, Holland, or I heard somewhere that Netherlands, and I think you talked about this too, they have overall very good, business, climate and things like that too. Have you seen the same kind of things that we see in America with people getting their bank accounts shut down and things? Is that an issue in the Netherlands?
No, because that's illegal. There's the banks have a duty to give people, like, it's illegal to just shut down someone's bank account if they don't have an alternative, because the banks are by law mandated to give people a bank account.
Yeah.
It's different for businesses. They can shut down business accounts down, but we haven't had that happen here yet. I think on the whole, those sorts of things, usually we lag behind on them because most Dutch people are still have a lot of common sense and they would be kind of shocked. I mean, our press is, of course, our media is very biased and very progressive and very left wing. But whenever I look at like British tabloids or British TV or American TV, you wouldn't get away with something like CNN in the Netherlands. People would think this is just so overtly propagandistic. I'm not watching this.
Yeah.
So they have to be a bit more subtle about those sorts of things. So shutting down someone's bank account over here, that would probably make the news and the bank would be in trouble over that. And also because we've got parliamentary political parties, like with some Wilders and Baudet would ask questions about that in parliament, and there would be an inquiry commission,
yeah,
and the government would have to formulate an answer. So the fact that we've got political representation also helps us to an extent.
Yeah, no, that's really, really good. A couple of more here. Just Brad C. gave a diamond over on DLive. Thank you for that. Rose City 74 with the Ninja Guinea. Thank you for that. Simply says, greetings from the Pacific Northwest. Greetings. Thank you for tuning in. Good to have you here. And also thank you to Silosopher giving Kofing a 1 month sub there, and thank you to everyone subbing over on DLive. I appreciate that. All right, so what should we close off here with, Faust?
Well, I think what I would say is it's a question of momentum as well for a lot of things. If you get enough people within your local community who agree with you, like if you look at Flanders, the fact that just about 50 to 60% of the people agree with the Flemish nationalist agenda means that you can get away with so much because you're not some fringe weirdo talking about weird things. You're just another member of the community. So if you live in a village and you've got like 30 or 40 other people who agree with you and you're publicly visible in that sense, you can get a lot of stuff done. And I think you see this happening in the United States where the so-called red states are moving more and more away from the Washington agenda, especially Florida and so on. But you see this happening somewhat on the state level, I think, in the United States, where simply because the state is basically entirely Republican, they just do whatever they want.
Right. Yep, exactly. Well, it's crazy. What do you think politically here? Give us your crystal ball kind of analysis here a little bit at the end. Will it just continue more of the same until the window closes in terms of the politics? I mean, I think we're almost there now in terms of an opportunity to change something politically. And if not at that point, I guess then the Flanders model would be, you know, another one to follow to do something. But again, that would kind of almost mean that at the short term, that would be very hard then to like regain control of our countries, but it would turn into more of a I don't know, separatist communities. It doesn't sound right, but you know what I mean? That basically this, you have a group of people, they just don't want to take part in this. They want to have somewhere to live. They want to, there's nowhere. So where do we go? You know, kind of thing, right? So you're still in the country that you were, that you're in of the ethnicity, nationality that you're part of. But you're setting up something and living in a way that you want to do, which kind of then turns it into a little bit of a smaller area. But at least hopefully you can live in somewhat according to the ways that you'd prefer.
Yeah, exactly that. I think on the whole, we're all just waiting for the American empire to collapse, really. I mean, we're all staring at the Americans, and whatever the Americans do dictate what we do in Europe to a huge extent. The problem is, if America falls, who knows who becomes a global hegemon then? Do we get China? Will the EU actually start building itself as a world power? My hope is that the European nations will be able to work together as a power block and become again, the global hegemon replacing the United States and their degenerate culture. But on the whole, I think in terms of big things, we can't do anything. It's all up to America and what happens in America. And we can't influence that from outside the United States. So it's up to Americans to change things. What I see from American dissidents is all kinds of incompetence and idiocy. And I don't think they're going to manage to change anything, really. So unfortunately, I think we just have to kind of wait for American power to decline to such an extent that especially their media and cultural influence declines, and that European countries start realizing that they have to be more self-assertive or be taken over by Russia or China. So, yeah, it's kind of a pessimistic take, I'm afraid, at the end there.
Shots fired, gentlemen. Some criticism here for Americans.
Well, look at the biggest American network, like Killstream, right?
Is that the biggest one?
That's a completely degenerate guy leading that.
I like Ethan. We need some of that. I, as you said before, you know, that there's a value and a steam valve thing to that, but, it's a different niche, obviously, than what you're trying to do, obviously, right?
What Killstream is for me, the epitome of the problem with the whole American scene is it's all just entertainment. It's incredibly lowbrow. It's not building anything. It's very destructive. It incites fighting all the time. And it puts people who absolutely do not deserve it on a pedestal. I mean, the guy leading it is an alcoholic.
Ethan is a good guy. Well, I won't come down on Ethan, but have your say. Yeah. But,
well,
I like Ethan.
Well, the thing is, this is generally true of most of the American movement that it doesn't really go much beyond just streaming and infighting on the internet and not building anything. And I don't see anything positive coming out of the United States, really. Jared Taylor is probably one of the best guys around. He does some productive stuff. Oops. Countercurrents, decent, and that's about it. Everything else is just talking about the news and streaming and entertainment and not building anything. And it can be quite degenerate as well. So
I think it's
also impressed by the Americans.
I think it's I understand that, and I think it's late in the game, but it's also early. Do you know what I'm saying? That a lot of this is kind of like. The nationalism in America has been very, symbolic, but also potent and in a way kind of in your face, which made this perception that it's like, oh, this is how it is now. But then all of a sudden, within the realm of a couple of decades, it was just like, you know, every conservative value, every nationalist patriotic value, more or less gone out the window. And then they have a little bit of a relapse with Trump, which was, as you said in the beginning, kind of an anomaly. I think we'll see things, and I think it's just... Also, the sheer scale and size of the country makes it more difficult. Again, I think if people need to start working locally. I think you'll see things like there's a Pacific Northwest movement, there's a Greater Idaho movement and things like that. There's other types of things in, you know, whether it's West Virginia or southern parts and stuff. And that I think generally is good.
Americans need
you know?
To stop thinking about America, but think about their state. I mean, that's what the whole damn thing was founded on, the idea of states and states' rights, right?
Right.
You can't work on that bigger scale. I mean, one of the reasons European nationalist movements are far more successful and better organized is we're just smaller. Like the Netherlands, the Dutch-speaking world sphere has maybe 30 million people in it, if you include South Africa and Belgium. And that's manageable, right?
Yeah.
And the same goes for Germany. There's 80 million, and then you've got Austria, but say 100 million Germans or so. That's manageable. That's geographically manageable. You can reach people. It also helps that we have our own languages and our own separate culture. But I think Americans should think way more about on a state level. Stop thinking about what's happening in California or New York, but worry about what's happening in your own state capital.
I agree, and I think that that's something we're going to start to see, especially when it gets more polarized. And right now, actually, you know, while we're talking, this natural kind of division or split is kind of happening where like conservative people are like leaving California in droves, you know, and they're going to states that are more conservative. And you'll start to see this kind of split. So I still think overall I'm positive in the sense. I think there's a lot of good people in America and they will start realizing that, hey, we can't like trust that we're going to change this yet on a federal level. We have to think locally. We have to, draw a line in the sand and basically say, this is our place. It's we who control that. This is the people say, and we want to live the way we want to live. So I still think there's going to be a lot of good things, kind of out of that environment. But then at the same time, I understand what you're saying. Now, the reason with the American focus too, partially also by Europe, I think you hit the nail on the head when you say that it's obviously a declining empire. It's rotted from within. This, I think, it's an intentional plan. I think it's to overwhelm the system, to cause it to collapse. There's a new global order that's arising out of this. The internationalists used America for a long time. It was the military force or whatever. Now it's a Belt and Road Initiative. It's countries like China, India, even Russia to a certain extent. Israel, a very small country, is going to be part of that Belt and Road Initiative, be a very important geographical. And I think eventually maybe even a spiritual hub in this new kind of system that they're building. But they're turning their back on America, basically, and it's crumbling from the inside. They're ruining it financially, intentionally, and everything. And But think back to, on the situation in the Balkans, right, back in the early 90s, right, where you had a European country with internal conflicts, Serbia, Bosnia, that whole thing, Kosovo, where America came in and sided with the Mujahideen side, basically, right? And that's why people still look to America, because, like, you could have a European country break off and do something, but America would still, I think, be on the invade, especially if it's a European country,
occupying troops in Germany.
Exactly,
in
they're still doing it. Yep,
the UK.
They are. There was even some news about that. RT had the piece that it's like Germany is still living under some kind of legal clause that they're legally considered to be an occupied country and they don't have sovereignty.
Oh, well, the Constitution of Germany was written by the United States. That's one of the arguments a lot of the Reichsbürger make,
right,
is that ever since Weimar, Germany hasn't been able to assert itself and therefore it has that sovereignty. So every regime since the Kaiser fell is illegitimate.
Yeah.
That's one of their legal arguments.
Go ahead.
America doesn't have roots, right? That's one of the reasons they can, that global capitalism can so easily take over.
They do, but it's been replaced, right? There's this shadow version of America, the melting pot America that's been replaced, which is a farce. It wasn't the case, but you know what I mean?
But there are some culture that I'd say there are some roots that they could go back to. For example, the Anglo-Saxon tradition in more in the north, in Vermont and so on, you know, Melville and, things, writers like that, Jack London. When you've got the South, of course, you've got Southern secessionist ideas. And the only American nationalists I generally like are more of the sort of Southerners, because they've got much more of a grasp of their own history, who they are as a people. They've got a conception of themselves, which reminds me more of how European nationalists are, where European nationalists are more very rooted in their history, very rooted in their culture, very opposed to, for example, English being introduced as a language, American cultural influences and so on. And I think that the sort of Southerners, Confederate sort of thing, they get that, because that's also happened to them with Yankees taking over their culture. I can get along with those guys a lot better than I usually can get with the white nationalist sort of types who don't seem to have any roots and who just seem to appeal to Nazi Germany for most of their ideas, which isn't their country and not their tradition, and they don't understand it anyway. They can't even speak German.
Some are trying very hard. No, but I get your point. All right. Dished out. I get your criticism, and thank you for having your say about that. I think it's too, I guess the overall is, it's too early to tell. I think that this struggle has kind of started now in terms of which direction things will go. And especially even after January 6th, this idea that how a large segment, I mean, there's a website in America now, like, what do we do about the 74 million people that voted for Trump? Like, they want to put these people in some kind of re-education camps or something. It's a breakdown and an ongoing battle. It's never really gone away, but it's intensified in a level that we haven't really seen internally in America. And this happening at a time that where other countries are rising up. Ultimately, I think it would be a good thing, you know, for the collapse of the American empire. But at the same time, we should also be wary of who's going to replace it, because I think if China puts itself in that position, as bad as the neocon kind of faction has been in America and stuff like that, and it's been certainly detrimental to many European countries, most European countries, be careful what you wish for, because China,
I know,
it's not going to be any better, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but that's what I think. My hope, dream, whatever you want to call it, would be that Europe can form itself as a sort of, not the EU such as it is today, but I think,
right.
I mean, Europe has more people than the United States. We've got a bigger economy than the United States, technically speaking, if you put us all together. Mm-hmm. If we were to cooperate, we could easily be a global power player. We've got the manpower, we've got the IQ, we've got the technology, the economy. It's just that the current system makes it that we are basically slavishly following the United States, and I don't think we need to. And it's destroying our culture as well.
All right, very good. I appreciate your perspective, Faust. Thank you so much for joining us. Always a pleasure talking with you, connecting with you, listening to what's going on only in the Netherlands, but some other areas in Europe as well. What's next? Do you have anything up ongoing? Something? Do you go to events still? Yeah. Is there something you'd like to plug? I'm not sure what's going on.
Yeah. So I have my own YouTube channel where I mostly, my English-speaking YouTube channel, I mostly talk about whatever ideas I happen to have, or do some streams about you know, nationalist stuff. Mm-hmm. But I have a Dutch language project, which for any Dutch people, Dutch speakers listening is probably interesting, called Dietse Bazang, which is sort of, my idea was to imitate PragerU, but with reactionary ideas.
Right, right.
I think that model works quite well. You can see how popular PragerU is after all. And we also publish a magazine about arts, culture, and history, which I write with a few other guys. We might start doing events. It's on the table, Bill. We might expand this project. For now, it's just a media project to inform people about basically Dutch history, Dutch nationalism, good, reactionary ideas.
That's good. Check out these channels, ladies and gentlemen. Here's one, Dietse Bazang. How did you pronounce it?
Dietse Bazang.
Bazang. Okay, that's for the Dutch-speaking audience. And then you have just simply Faust, the channel. You had it here. What was it again? Let me pull it up. The URL.
Faust Lanzer 1. It's just my name.
Faust Lanzer 1, right? That's what it was?
Yeah.
Right down there, folks. You got it in the lower third right there. So check that out. All right. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you so much, Faust. Always good to talk to you. Keep me in the loop. Let me know what's going on, and we'll have you back again in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me on.
Awesome. We'll see you later. Take care, man.
Bye.
Bye. All right, there we go. Thank you so much. Appreciate that. Thank you for staying with us today. I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you enjoyed the perspective. Shout out to Ethan Ralph as well. I like Ethan. I don't have a problem with Ethan. He's been always very nice to me. And I think it's, his show and many others fulfill kind of a specific purpose. So I don't want to chime in and go along in what Val said today. But whatever, that's his opinions. He's entitled to them. But otherwise, I think there's some good points made by Faust. It is a very, you know, kind of American-centric online environment. And again, I think it's for a reason. Many people are talented there in terms of what they're doing as well. But also a lot of eyes are on America, you know, for that purpose. That it's just been such a strong dominating force in the world, especially with the media and stuff, like where that media is going. It's mimicked and stuff in the rest of the, not only Western world, but in some cases in the rest of the world. So it's for good reason, but then at the same time, both as we explained in the show, both sadly, but also kind of in, you know, to some advantage, that's in decline now, right? It's an empire in decline. So everyone is curious to see where is this going? What's going to happen? I know that there's a lot of good people in the U.S., a lot of good people, a lot of well-meaning, intended, kind white people that are being screwed over as the machine is clamping down in the way that it is, right? So I think there's going to be a lot more regions that go their own way, so to speak, in America. And it's just such a big country. It's so hard to keep that together. There's this classic life cycle of a nation. And there's whether it's an economic collapse or an actual cultural collapse, it just seems to go through this. Every so often, I forget what the number, so I heard some scholar put a number on it, like 250 years or 300 or something like that. But anyway, we could go on and talk about this for quite a while, but, we'll wrap up right there, folks. I appreciate your support. Thank you so much for watching today. Thank you to those who donated over on DLive. I think we'll save the box there until tomorrow. Let me see who else, wrote here. Filbert Applebag. Over on DLive sent a diamond and say, hey, thank you, sir. Appreciate that. And also Rose City 74 with another Ninja Genie. Thank you so much for that. We'll hang on to the chest over there on DLive until tomorrow. We'll open that for Flashback Friday, so we'll be back tomorrow. We have a lot of work to do to try to figure out. We're still doing investigation, forensic tech investigation on redicemembers.com. Why it's down, we don't believe that it's some kind of nefarious, malicious attack or anything like that. First, we thought it might be certificate related or something like that. But right now, Red Ice TV is up and running. So please go there. I'm going to update yesterday's show there and this show, of course, when we upload that later, too. But just a special shout out and thank you to all the members out there for your patience. While we fix this, we're going to get it fixed. So we'll back up and running shortly. If we, for whatever reason, don't have it fixed until Sunday's show, we'll just put that on BitChute and Odyssey. So we'll put up a Weekend Warrior show. And that way, non-members can get a sample as well. That way, we continue the shows. And everyone can get access to them and stuff like that. But yeah, thank you again, ladies and gentlemen. Appreciate it. Let's see what we should do at the outro here. Then we gotta play a little bumper here and maybe some maybe a tune or two. We'll figure that out, I guess. But yeah, so tomorrow we'll be back with Flashback Friday, of course, as usual. That's 6 p.m. Eastern, midnight Central European Time. We'll talk about some of the latest and some of the insanity that goes on. But we appreciate the support. See you guys tomorrow. Take care, everybody. Thank you for joining us.